Join your hands behind your head and just think. Join your hands behind your head and just think. The golden sun calls you to battle your way out of the silk which surrounds you. Fight until you create a hole in the cocoon. 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 A hole in the cocoon.
A hole in the cocoon.
So, want to start then?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Hi, everybody!
Like that?
Sort of. Yeah, like I think that suits the tone of the book and the, you know, Halloween theme. It's be scary.
Okay. hi, everybody, and welcome to the Bookhouse Boys. I'm Matt Howell.
I'm Jason Farrell.
I'm Dave Alvisa.
And we're doing a Halloween special. We kicked this around a while, talked about doing something special for Halloween because that was always one of our favorite one of my favorite episodes to do.
Signature moves.
Yeah. We landed on doing Bird Box by, help me.
Josh Malerman.
So I had first heard about this book from Dave. I think we actually, Dave talked about it on one of our, what do we used to call those? Off week episodes or whatever. Well, it wasn't a particular selection week. It was just what you're reading episodes.
Yeah.
So I think Dave brought this into my mind.
We called it mini episodes, but it was a misnomer.
Yeah. And then after Dave talked about it, it seemed like within a few months I saw it at Powell's, like on all the displays, like, either, you know, in-store recommendation things, or maybe it was a
bestseller. Was it a bestseller?
Cutouts. I think it was like that
I think
thing.
It
where
was. Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me.
It was one of the bigger horror books last year or the year before, whenever it came out.
I believe 2015 or 2014 was when it came out.
Yeah.
So, Dave, how did you discover it?
I think that's how I discovered it. I was looking for contemporary horror fiction because that's been sort of a blind spot for me. I had read through a lot of the old crusty stuff and was kind of like, is there anything new going on in this genre, like at all? and looked through a few book descriptions. I guess it was probably about 2015, and this one got seemed to be on a lot of lists, a lot of favorite lists. So I picked it up.
Okay. Someone clawing their way out of a coffin.
Yeah, what it sounds like.
Did anybody else hear that?
What?
It sounds like somebody's like banging, like scraping on something or tapping something? No? Okay.
I muted because I coughed. I don't know if it mistimed it or something.
I don't think that was it. Anyway, Dave, have you ever heard his band?
No. I had forgotten that he used to be in a band, or maybe still is in a band.
It's called The High Strung. I didn't really have an opportunity to check it out. I'm just curious.
No, I don't know anything about that.
Okay. So yeah, how do you want to do this? It's been so long.
Well, that's the first question that you ask in almost every episode that we cover a book. And so just to follow tradition, then we say, well, we could kind of summarize this book is almost plotless.
What?
And or you could almost say it's all plot, but it's there's not much that happens in this book.
What?
So a summary of the plot would be really, it would be the whole book.
Okay, that's fair enough. I guess probably pitching it as a concept would be a way to talk about to introduce the book.
I think we need to introduce the concept because that's really what carries this book, in my opinion, both in a good sense and just in general structurally.
Okay.
So the concept, Dave, since you're the inaugural person that discovered this book, why don't you explain it? You explained it to us originally a few years ago.
Okay. The concept, which is sort of a, at least as far as I new, or still new, was a fairly new one, and that's what intrigued me, is that there suddenly begin to appear these creatures. And at first you don't even know if actually they're really appearing. It's just that people are starting to go crazy, like violently insane. By violently, I mean that they at least kill themselves every time and often will start killing other people around them. It'll be totally out of character for them. They'll just suddenly kind of snap. And within half an hour, they and everybody around them, as often as not, are dead. Usually with like scissors or knives or things, you know, messily. because it happens so quickly, nobody really knows why it's happening. You sort of slowly learn that it's because of some sort of creatures that when you see them, they're so weird or so whatever, that it drives you completely mad. So as people begin to realize that seeing something is what is driving people crazy, they start to board up their houses and stay inside and won't leave their houses without blindfolds. And, you know, as the infrastructure of every country on Earth begins to collapse, they are all trying to survive like that.
It's a classic story, oldest time.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, and this is told, I think, structurally. Sorry, Jason.
I was going to say, the story is told primarily through, well, almost entirely, through the eyes of Mallory, a newly pregnant woman.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, structurally, it's told in how many time periods? There's the present, essentially.
Just two, really.
Yeah, and it's kind of flashbacks. A three. Yeah, well, yeah, but I mean, like,
it skips around a little bit in the flashbacks.
But I mean, like, as far as like a BCAD, there's definitely like the time in the house with the people, and then there's the time after a terrible thing happens, and it's her and her children, and then there's and then it's all being reflected on through the present of escape.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it does jump from the beginning stuff to the being in the house stuff. So, yeah, I guess there is kind of three. Yeah. Agree. I said yeah a lot right there.
Yeah. Sorry, I was chewing a martini all of that spirit.
Yeah. Wow.
Trapper John, MD.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you guys want to talk about impressions or what, like how you want to start, but...
Oh, I could do impressions.
Not rich little.
I want to do. Now I really, really want to do impressions.
Okay.
Mallory, impression of Mallory. Tom, you're so great. Great, Tom. You make me feel comfortable, Tom. Tom, impression of Tom. I have an idea for a helmet. Oh, shit, it fell apart. I'll fix it. Impression of Don. Getting cereal. Okay, I'm done.
Cereal? Okay.
I don't know. I guess they didn't really have cereal. What did they eat? Just pork and beans all day long?
It's what they canned, ate. Canned vegetables for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. They didn't cook.
Which is terrible.
They didn't even build fires and cook. They just ate cold beans all day long.
And if anyone's, you know, listening to this and intends to read this book and doesn't want to know how things happen, you might want to pause this, go read the book, and then come back. We'll wait.
Yeah, this is there's no not spoiling. I mean, we never worried very much about spoiling things anyway in our, because we want to analyze and or discuss and whatever, talk about what happens in the book and themes, etc. They're not promo pieces designed to make you buy the book, but this book is, you would just miss out on essentially everything that would make it worth reading if you know what's going to happen or what the basics of it are.
So. Yeah. So I was particularly taken, one of the things I really liked about this was that I liked the idea, I liked when they talked about what the cause was. And it's kind of landed on throughout the process of, you know, the storytelling that these are creatures. and that viewing them will drive you mad and cause this to happen. But there's, you know, no one has survived, essentially, that has seen them. At least
that's not true.
Well, at least as far as the when it's pitched to you, that is how it is. Or for the majority of the book. Okay. So it's not even clear that there are creatures. I mean, a lot of it, for the first half of the book, or even the majority of the book, it's not clear if it's a virus or if there actually are creatures stalking around that do this. And I really liked that people, like, their conjecture was that the creatures are infinity, and trying to comprehend that is what drives you mad.
Yeah.
I think the influence of Lovecraft is obvious. And you said that it was an original idea, Dave, and I think that it is. But the idea of some kind of entity driving someone crazy when they see it is not new. And Lovecraft, that was kind of the core of the Lovecraft.
Oh, well, sure. Yeah. That goes back to, like, the Bible. That's stare into the face of God and go mad, right?
Right. Right. And
yeah. Yeah. Your face will melt off and shit.
So the idea of so you think about that for a second, like, what would make you go insane if you saw it? And because it's so hideous, well, I don't know if that would, you know, drive someone insane enough to go kill people. Usually then, and then the Lovecraft idea, it quickly gets to something that our minds cannot process, can't contain. Mm-hmm. And so the infinity idea, which is stated as that and really doesn't go any farther than that. They look like infinity. That's how it manifests in this novel.
Yeah. Or at least that's, you know, like you said, the conjecture, because that's one of the things that I really dug about this story is that you don't ever find out the answer.
Yeah.
Really. You get little hints along the way, but a lot of that is, again, sort of like with a blindfold on. You don't. It's sort of like, I heard a noise and I think that was one of them, but not sure. Or something brushed against my shoulder and I think that might have been one of them, but not really sure. There's only one time, there are two times, but there's one time really. Where you finally realize that, without a doubt, Mallory's in the same room with one of these creatures, right?
In the attic.
Well, the first time is when she goes to that club with the dog looking for the microphones.
Well, chronologically, that's after, but it comes
right. The first chronologically, it's later, but yeah. So that's the like before then, it had always been like, heard something in the yard or something brushed my shoulder. I don't know. Maybe it was a leaf or I don't know. But that's the first time where the characters and therefore the reader are 100% sure that they're in the same room with one of these creatures. And you get sort of like a dense, foul, musty smell. But nothing that's really becomes of it other than that's when she learns that it affects animals as well, which is, I thought, was another really interesting detail.
Yeah, and to be honest, when I first read that, and even a little bit when I read it the second time, I kind of wasn't sure that she actually was in the presence of one, because I almost thought that because she's blindfolded and she's in this bar, she's getting microphones so she can mic up her yard so she can, you know, put amps and speakers in her house and hear when something approaches, and there's a what do you call that? Like a trap door into a cellar in the bar on the barroom floor. And that's open, which I think she almost falls in, and she smells this overwhelming stench, which I just took to mean like people were hiding in there and died and were rotting. And then she was just having a visceral reaction to that stuff. But then the dog turns, right? So, I mean, that kind of confirms that something was in there. Right.
Right.
I mean, I guess at that point I wasn't still convinced there were actually creatures, but
Like you said,
there are several times where it happens. So, I mean, I guess there are.
I took it the same way as far as the smell and her reaction to the trapdoor and everything. that people, there were human bodies down there rotting. But
if you want to take it that way, then you might say that at that point you're still not 100% sure that there are creatures, because if it's some sort of fast-moving virus, maybe it just moved up for whatever reason, didn't affect Mallory, but did affect Victor. And he just started losing his shit, because that's the only evidence you have that something is wonky there.
I never doubted personally that it was creatures, and I kind of hate using that word just because of how that word is used in the book. But
she hated that word too.
Yeah. There's a tip my hand here. There's a general lack of imagination, I think, on a lot of different levels in this book. In the overall writing, and also in the characters, in their thought processes. And that's kind of one of them. But I never doubted that there were actual creatures, because everything that the characters do, short of the very, very beginning, when you're basically with her sister, and whose name is Shannon, I believe.
Yep.
And they are living together, I guess. The sisters live together. And they're hearing these early news reports of different people killing themselves and other people around the country, or actually other countries, I think, to begin with. And then it kind of seems to encroach on them geographically. And at that point, the speculation is more, you know, it could be whatever. Like, it could be nothing, or it could be a virus, or whatever. But once the first time skip kind of happens, and she's in the house with various people, there's never any inclination from any character in the book, or from the authorial voice, or anything else, that it's anything but some kind of being. And all of their precautions are very much in the sense of keeping out whatever it is they can't look at. They don't ever wear any masks, you know, like to filter the air, or, and when they let people in, which they do several times, their only precaution is to get them in quickly and then sweep brooms all over the place, thinking that they're going to make physical contact with something else if it came in with them. Mm-hmm. And nothing happens to anybody. You know, that it just continues to be, it continues on as if they don't let in these creatures, or if they don't come into contact with them and see them, then they don't go crazy and everything is fine. And that's how the book operates, although right up until the end, at which point, go ahead, or intake a breath.
Oh, I can hold it.
No, I don't want to dominate. Go ahead.
No, I'm just, I was going to say, yeah, I agree with you, except that with an asterisk of, like, there is George. I mean, George seems like he's one of the first empirical, like, he has a theory. George is the person who owned the house and put out the ad saying, come here for a safe haven. And some of the first people were there with him, and he had a theory that you could use refracted lenses, something, some way of, like, transmuting the visual so you could see these things without the effect happening. So he comes across the idea of, like, well, a video camera would have a lens which would flip it around, and then it comes in and it gets read by a chip and, you know, changes into a digital signal, whatever. So, like, that, this is probably safe. And then he gets tied up like Odysseus and watches the tape upstairs, and it doesn't go so great.
Right.
Right. But how does that differ? His theory still is that they're physical entities that you can't look at.
Yeah, I was just saying that seemed to confirm, like, that supports the creature thing. Like, I was with you at first, like, when you're saying it, until the end, it's not really confirmed that there are these things that are...
Oh, okay, then I misspoke, because what I'm trying to say is that, for me, it was... I was never in doubt.
Oh, okay.
That's what it was the entire time. But for someone who was in doubt, you know, that would potentially be, although still, you know, it's secondhand. When he goes crazy, he's looking at a tape and no one's in there with him. And you could, if you wanted to, you know, figure out some other thing that happened there. But the book is told entirely through Mallory's from Mallory's perspective. And in the attic at the end of the book, we have direct physical contact kinds of, you know, description of something pulling her blindfold off and that kind of stuff.
I thought that was on the boat.
Yeah.
Maybe that was on the boat, but the, okay. So
Olympia
different...
loses her mind. She senses it behind her and then Olympia goes mad and does what Olympia does.
Right.
In the attic.
Yeah. I thought there was something beyond just someone going mad around her in the attic. Maybe not. I thought there was.
Olympia says something like, "You're beautiful. You're not ugly at all."
That's true.
Confirmation that she sees something. She finally sees like the creature.
Yeah, that's true. I think Gary acknowledges that it's there too, but of course Gary is supposed to be crazy anyway. So Gary is a character who everyone is just, they're like Cher, you know. Everyone has one name. You only need one name in the apocalypse.
You really don't. You really, unless there's two Dons.
Unless another Gary shows up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, shit, the kids didn't even get names for most of the book.
Yeah, we got.
I was just like, talk. What, you don't have names in the apocalypse? Boy and girl? Jesus Christ,
yeah,
kids.
We have boy and girl, yeah. I guess one of the only things that, maybe the only moment of real surprise I had in the entire book was when I realized that they weren't both her biological children.
Ah.
I literally got all the way up into the birth scene before I'm like, oh, that's Olympia's kid. Yeah. So yeah, Gary is, so in every story about, no, this is not a criticism. This is just kind of how these stories work and it's fine. In every story about a zombie plague, which this essentially is a zombie plague story, even though it takes a different form, but any kind of thing where there's a ragtag group holding out against some kind of, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. 99.9% of the time, the story actually ends up being about the humans and how the humans are the worst monsters. And that's who they're really, you know, the real danger is from and that kind of thing. And even though, well, I guess literally humans were the real danger because they're the ones that went crazy and killed each other and themselves. But, mm-hmm. But of course, in our little microcosm world of the house, the climactic scene is not going to be the creature suddenly deciding to break down the doors and come in. It's human problems, and Gary provides that along with Dawn, his disciple. And Gary is someone who we have probably about two or three other people come to the house and be accepted in over the course of the story. But he comes and Mallory doesn't trust him from the beginning. He seems weird.
He has a beard.
He has a beard. Yeah. And he tells them that the house that he was at, things went poorly. Things went wrong. And he had to get out of there. I don't remember the whole story, but it had to do with like militia types who were going to fight back against the creatures and stuff like that. And Gary describes another person,
Frank.
Frank, who professed to be able to see the creatures, but not go crazy in the process. And Frank, air quotes, had all these theories about that. And wrote endless journals like Kevin Spacey in Seven.
I was just going to say that. Just psycho notebook. Yeah.
Like, in, you know, real little precise writing in all the margins. And supposedly this guy, I don't remember if he got kicked out of the house or what exactly had happened, but...
So when Gary tells it, Frank said that the only reason people are going mad is because they expect they are going to. So if you just steal your mind and prepare yourself and tell yourself you're not going to go mad, you won't. And so he tears down all the blankets off the windows and then leaves. Yeah, and then leaves.
That's what Frank did.
With his notebooks, supposedly, yes.
That's what he says Frank did, yeah.
That's what he says Frank did, yeah.
So you can find out there probably is no Frank.
There is no Frank.
Gary, he's talking about.
Were you guys? I mean, I knew it was him from the beginning. I never thought there was another person. I thought it was him. Did you guys assume that from the beginning as well, or no?
I remember when I first read this. So I plowed through this. I was homesick from work one day like a year ago, and I could not put this down once I picked it up. And I remember thinking, I'm pretty sure there is no Frank. This seemed like a convenient kind of way to distance yourself from these ideas, but also kind of espouse them, right, or whatever. So it confirmed that, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah. And the I think the – it's kind of weird, but I think the author doesn't want you to think it's him or that it's a different person either, because he makes Mallory, giver of information, immediately distrust how he refers to – he calls it the insanity fuss or something like that.
Right.
This is from Gary. Out of Gary's mouth, he's like, you know, this whole insanity fuss. And she's like, you know, that's kind of a dismissive way to put it, you know? And so it seems like you're kind of asked to discount that from the beginning because she is.
Yeah.
Which is a little strange almost to me. I don't know if... yeah, I don't know if that's more or less tension as a reader. If you're kind of like, oh, okay, maybe it's more to know that there's a snake in their midst that they're not all aware of.
Well, there's sort of like a different psychological level for me where, like, I also kind of agreed with Mallory. And you guys, where it was like, yeah, I don't know about this guy. But a lot of the things that Mallory would think, that they would be sort of these conversations in her head where she's going back and forth on a point and arguing to herself. And I thought that was sort of the important part that we're supposed to get out of that. Like, you don't trust this guy. You think, he's probably, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know about this story. But there's never that 100% certainty until you know, right? And when it's like every decision is literally life and death, it seems like, then it sort of becomes like, well, now I've got to find the proof. And she instantly goes searching out for the proof and instantly finds it.
Yeah. Well, anybody.
There's not that many places to look, to be
right,
fair.
Right.
I'm all for travel and light, but in the apocalypse, if somebody shows up at my house with a fucking briefcase,
right,
they're either a psycho or an attorney, and I don't want either one in my fucking house. Thanks, though. Keep walking, Buster.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, let's take a thorough look through this thing. So that was sort of, for me, where that was the tension. There was sort of two levels of tension. One was thinking, I don't trust Gary. And the second was, should I trust Gary? Is Mallory losing her mind a bit? Because remember, they're all stuck in a house and they still don't really know what it is that's driving people crazy.
And you don't know, she's pregnant, so you don't know if this is like a hormonal, you know. I mean, I don't want to sound just like a sexist prick.
Oh, saying like too late.
The kind of like, you know, maybe she's into hormonal overdrive or being hyperprotective of her children and this guy is, you know, got pit stains and a briefcase. I don't like him either. Mm. I mean,
I think the whole book could have stood for a lot to have a lot more people going a little crazy, like a little more hysteria, a little more paranoia, a little more
the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, actually. I mean, it doesn't, obviously there you had the layer of it being able to look like people.
Right.
But Even without that, one of the best parts about this book for me is it did get me just to think, and it comes back to the fact that just the basic premise to me is the real strong part of this, because the idea we're visual creatures. Now, obviously, there are blind humans, but I, as much as I would definitely not want to be blind, I think in a situation like this, it would almost be worse that you could see, but you can't let yourself see.
Right.
Because the instinct to look would be so strong. You know, your survival instinct is based on like processing visual information and acting on it, you know, and you want to see what's coming after you. You want to see where the escape routes are so you can go through them as quickly as possible, et cetera, et cetera. And the characters in this book are constantly in these positions where they're having to do everything and navigate everything, and they can't look, and they have to prevent themselves from looking. And that's one of the good parts about also, you know, she does have a baby in the past of this book. And then in the present of this book, you know, she's making her way with her kids to the promise of a safer place. And she's trained them from birth to rely on their hearing and not their sight, but they can see, of course. And so she's constantly getting, if something happens, anything happens, especially when they're outside, the first thing she'll do is scream at them not to take their blindfolds off. Like, no matter what it is, you know, don't take your blindfolds off.
Yeah, somebody farts. She says, don't take your blindfold off.
Right.
Because there's that acknowledgement, which I think is more or less true, that the first instinct of a non-blind human being is going to be to look at something, to look at what startled them, to look toward the source of the noise. And she knows that that's the worst possible thing you can do. So, and it must be a pretty helpless feeling for her, because she can scream that and she can try to make sure that they don't take their blindfold off, but it's only going to take, if there is one there, if you believe that, you know, they're all over and you can see them and then it's immediate, it only take a second. It only take a slip, you know? Just thinking of that premise, just thinking of how tough that would be to operate in the world with trying to not to look at anything is a strong one.
So Dave kind of alluded to the, you know, an unreliable narrator possibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you pick up on that at all? Did you think there was any of that to this? Like I did all the stuff that's in the present during the river sequences. I just started to question her sanity at this point. She'd been alone. Her whole ordeal goes over like 4.5 years. So she's been alone essentially for like 4 years. I don't know how long they were actually there before shit went down, but I think it's not that long.
Matter of 6 months or less.
Yeah. So, I felt like, you know, she's obviously, she's blind. She has her kids blinded with blindfolds. They're going down the river, which is an arduous task. But it felt like every single thing, like, was a bear or a whatever or this. I mean, and I understand it would be fucking terrifying being on the river blind, but it's like, I started to question, like, I don't know. I mean, like, I was surprised that the wound from the wolf was actually real when she, you know, it's literally bleeding. Like, oh, she's okay. That's real. 'Cause I thought she was just kind of like, it seemed like the birds went mad. Right. And they were attacking each other. And I mean, I don't know. There's a point there towards later Mallory seemed unreliable to me.
My answer to this is going to be surprising, and I hope it doesn't make anybody mad, but no, I didn't really think about her being an unreliable narrator. I thought her present self on the river, desperate with her kids, kind of almost more feral, was actually by far my preferred Mallory, and by far the one that was more realistic to me. Under the circumstances, I actually, and I am not kidding, I spent part of this book wondering if part of the kind of plot twist of this book was that she was developmentally disabled. Because she seems so simple-minded to me. In the early scenes with her and her sister, both of them, I'm like, I don't buy that you're 20-something adults who are living on your own in this world. Like, the dialogue is so simple, and their way of thinking about and expressing things is so simple.
But we live in a country with Trump as president.
I know, yeah.
It made perfect.
Then she goes to the house, and everybody's like that. I mean, these characters, I say characters, but Who could you describe Felix to me?
I was going to say, describe Jules. Besides, you can't use the word Victor.
You can't use Victor or dog. Jules is the guy with the dog. Yeah. Right. Felix
Cheryl.
Is the other guy who doesn't have a dog.
Yeah.
Don is the taciturn one who doesn't like to let people in. Tom is the comforting guy. I mean, it's like they're the most simplistic characterizations I have ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, I get your point. I mean, like you're saying, like in most like zombie things, right? Like especially Romero and the better ones. Obviously, any dipshit with a camera can make a zombie movie. But like a good zombie movie is about society and it's turning the lens back on who we are as people, right? You were saying that, and like The Walking Dead is the whole thing about, you know, it's not the walkers are their own threat, but they're controllable more or less. It's the people that are the biggest threat in the end, and what people will do when they're desperate.
Right.
And. Yeah, for the most part, I agree with you. That doesn't really that tool doesn't really get used here very much. As far as like, I mean, it's not. Don does represent an aspect of human, characteristics or whatever. But again, like Felix again, yeah, right? I mean, who the fuck was Felix?
I mean, you could take Felix out. Of all of them, he was the worst offender because I don't remember a single line of dialogue or scene or anything where he was distinguished at all.
You could,
and then there was Cheryl and an Olympia.
Yeah, he and Jules could be the same person. You literally could have just fused those two into one person and not had it made a fucking difference, except there would have been one less body at the end.
Right.
But yeah, I see what you're saying.
So I didn't think of her as being an unreliable narrator because I think for an unreliable narrator,
you have to have brains.
Well, you have to have something to contrast against. Like you have to have something else to trust. You have to have something else that might not jive with what they're saying. But that didn't happen here. And yeah, just the she was still pretty simplistic in present time, but in a less naive, less simple-minded, more kind of focused, this is all that matters kind of way. And that worked much better for me.
Yeah, I can see that, I guess. My biggest issue, I don't know, not biggest issue, but I didn't buy the whole run to get microphones thing. That seemed like a really... Bear in mind, people who are listening, this required putting a bunch of pillows and shit and comforters, taping them to the bumper of a car, painting the inside of the windows black in a car, and driving for fucking 6 miles, smashing into shit to go get microphones and speakers and an amp. That makes no fucking sense. These things never indicated at any point that they would ever enter a house. They've never done anything aggressive.
Right.
They seem to be roaming around and unintentionally driving people mad who see them. So why would you drive 6 miles in a blacked out car? It was bizarre.
And by that time, they had their bird system.
Yes.
The title, they literally go out looking for animals at one point. And they want to use the animals. They want to find dogs. And they want to use the dogs as an alarm system. They have one dog already, Victor. And they want to see if they can find more. They do.
Oh, by the way, that was one of my issues. I'd have been like, Jules, we're using Victor. Shut the fuck up. I'm not going to go risk my ass looking for more animals because you can't stand for your to train your dog. Yeah. Jesus Christ, Jules.
But he was the go-to guy for training every other animal. Like when they went, he went out to find the animals, right? And he was the one that would make them feel comfortable and train them. But not.
No, I get it. I'm just saying, like, I would have started smacking Jules. Like his reasoning sucked. Is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
No.
I'd have been like, Jules. Yeah, we're using the dog we have. We're not going to go search for more dogs because you don't feel like training this one because he's your best buddy or whatever.
But it's my only character trait. Yeah. Without him, I'll literally be Felix.
I'll just be Felix.
but I'm saying, like, what danger was the dog going to be in?
Well, apparently plenty.
Well, at that time, they had no idea that a dog would go crazy.
Yeah, I know. That was an open question, yes.
Yeah, that was an open question, but I also, I don't know.
Maybe he didn't want to be a guinea pig or whatever. But I mean, you know, the dog would also it knows when something's outside the house, whether it can see it or not. They're dogs. They can hear shit. They'll bark at anything, man. Trust me.
That is definitely true.
And dogs do have a 400 times stronger sense of smell than people. Which,
yeah.
If these things have an odor, I can see I could train them to be an alarm system. That makes sense. But Jason, I feel like you were going to make a point that I wanted to make, which was about the title of the book and being a metaphor or something, which didn't work. Is that correct?
Essentially, that is exactly what I was going to say.
I felt like – so the bird box is they find – they go out on one journey and they basically scour the block blind and they find these birds and bring them back. And then they set them up on the porch in a bird box. And when they, you know, they coo and make noises when something approaches, so they know it's like a canary in the coal mine thing. And right. I think that the title is supposed to indicate that the house is a bird box in some sense, but I didn't think that really worked. Like, I felt that another story, you could have done that, but that didn't work in this case, in my opinion. Like these, I don't know.
Yeah.
Am I reading that wrong?
No, I think you're right. In fact, I think it's explicitly said. I think someone, most likely Mallory, compares the house to a bird box.
Oh, does she? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Well, I missed that.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think it was shaky. It definitely wasn't the alarm system part of it, but being trapped inside a box part of it.
Oh, that's it.
Like I said, that's shaky. That's thin, yeah. At best, you know.
And my cover too, which is probably everybody's cover, is they didn't even think highly enough of that metaphor to use that as the cover art, because it's a phone.
Okay.
The cover art is a phone.
Well,
so
on it.
Let me ask you guys, cause I really don't know. Would the phone system? Okay, so first of all, this is supposed to be happening in present day. Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is not supposed to be happening in the 80s or something like that, right? It's present day.
Present day.
Well, apparently in Josh Mallerman's present day, everyone has landlines.
This is Michigan. Who knows what the fuck's going on?
Okay.
No. Not everyone has landlines. The house they're in happens to have a landline. They go to other houses without landlines.
He did acknowledge that they couldn't find a phone book. For the most
No one has phone books.
That's real. No one. I give you $5 right. And it could be a phone book in an hour.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, one of the big plans of this thing is that they want to call everyone in the phone book.
Right.
And that's why there's a phone on the front of this, and it's a rotary dial. It's not. Not only is it a landline, it's a rotary dial.
And then it's a desperation play for sure.
I mean, what do you do with your time?
Right.
Yeah, but it's like
it was a Tom idea.
It's
that's a special category I have where you're like,
really,
he's trying so hard.
Yeah.
But it's kind of dumb.
He's another simpleton. They're all simpletons, but it's put forth as if it's a good idea, like a perfectly sound idea. But I wanted to ask you, is that even plausible? They don't have anything else. Although, again, it's not really acknowledged much in my memory. They don't have electricity.
Yeah, they do.
Do they?
Yeah.
That's why?
Because they said that there was a power plant down the river, and that's where all that local power came from, that plant. And that's why the only reason they all had power.
And it's still working 4 years later? And
yes, they said in the beginning when she first showed up at the house that they're guessing that when the employees fled or whatever happened, that they left the gates like semi-open or something. They actually specifically alluded to it, that they left it in a position where it's running indefinitely, and until there's damage to the actual plant itself, they seem to have power.
Yeah, the only thing they don't have is running water, I think.
That seems more of a cop-out than anything, but right, because they're that's actually a fairly good visual or whatever from the book, is they don't have running water, so they have a well though, which is also interesting. I guess they have wells, but they have to go get water from the well. But it's a way for him to write scenes where they are painstakingly trying to go out of the house. And you do, I got the sense of it's not very far away. Like it'd be the most trivial thing in the world in a regular world. But one of the more effective scenes probably was one where maybe that was Felix. One of the characters is it's his job at the time to go get the water, and he's getting increasingly freaked out, you know, by things that he's hearing and stuff as he goes to get it. And he drops the bucket, accidentally drops it in the well and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Making something mundane into something terrifying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah,
I thought that was sort of an interesting bit of human psychology there. Mm-hmm. The fact that when he's out there and hearing like every twig that snaps or anything like that, every small sound gets amplified in his head. But then as soon as he gets back inside the house, he starts downplaying it again and saying, it's probably nothing. It's probably nothing. Now that I'm safe and secure, it was probably nothing. And I want to go back to thinking I'm safe and secure. I don't want to worry about what might have actually been out there realistically.
Well, Cheryl shat herself feeding the birds because she was pretty sure one of the creatures was on the patio or the porch with her. And it turned out it was a leaf.
Or she said, yeah.
Or she, I mean,
again, once she got back in the house, she was like, oh, it was probably just a leaf.
Yeah, it's not like you can check, right? Because that's again, that's the thing. You can't look. So you're, that's what I mean. Like, I wish there had been more hysteria and paranoia and such in this. Because I think you would be driven more to desperation. And you, I mean, there can still be characters who are more even-keeled than others, you know. But a more desperate feel to things would have been, I don't really get, you know, there's some talk about they're running out of food, but I don't really feel like there's a lot of feeling of starvation or even privation or anything. Like I've seen so many things where one of the basic aspects is like, where do you get food? And you got a tin can and can you even open it? And this food's rotten and just, I don't know, all the million little details of like how hard it is when the infrastructure that we depend on is gone. And I felt like that was lacking. It was kind of like business as usual so often in this place.
I kind of agree with you, but at the same time, I mean, you know, she kind of just elides over like the first, you know, most of her time there until Gary shows up essentially. Right. I mean, Tom goes out on a run with whoever, Felix or somebody, but I mean, that's the big stress point for them. But I mean, honestly, I mean, there is nothing to mention because they aren't doing anything. Like they're literally marking time for the most part. That, so when she says like, you know, months and months went by with nothing happening, it's literally nothing noteworthy happened.
Right.
But that's kind of, kind of the horror of this book though. If there is horror in this book is that just ordinary mundane things that we take for granted are now in of themselves intrinsically impossible and or terrifying. You're not being like you said earlier, the creatures have shown no hostility, outward hostility. Like they don't try to get into houses. The things that they do, it's like the equivalent of the Night of the Living Dead board up the windows to keep them out. Except in this case, you're keeping your vision in.
Right.
You're keeping yourself from being able to see out because they don't come in. They don't try to come in. You know, they don't rip off your blindfold. When they're out walking around looking for animals, they don't attack them in any way.
I think
it's like
just to support you, like when Gary reveals that he had been camping like across the street from them for a while and he'd been watching these things for a while and he was completely insane. He was like saying like, you have no idea how many of these things are out there. Like they're just screaming around. Like, so obviously they were fine.
Right.
Right. Right.
Beyond not being able to look at the world.
If we can trust him, speaking of unreliable narrators, and he's not the narrator,
fair enough.
Can we really take for granted anything that Gary says? Although, again, I do. I mean, honestly, the overall impression I get from the whole book is that I don't look for layers deeper than what I'm told because I don't think there are any. So if I'm told that, if Gary says that, I just believe him. I mean, really, there's no, there's like, there's not a lot of.
It's not an onion.
No.
So okay, then did you enjoy it?
Overall, no.
More than me, Doc Alley.
Oh yeah, I saw. I noticed. I think it's Dave is reading a book by him, right now.
Yeah.
By the Medoc Alley guy. I noticed that on Goodreads. Well, it's like the first book in a something trilogy.
Yeah, the Cairo trilogy.
Cairo trilogy. Yeah.
Alice Walk.
I enjoyed. Prize winner. Yeah. No, I know. I enjoyed parts of it, but boy, I.
Can we use this moment to pause?
For station identification.
Yeah, is that okay?
Yeah, I need some more coffee.
Yeah.
Okay, I need martini. Same thing. Whatever. Okay, all right. 5 minutes.
Okay. Earlier, I noticed that Lawrence Rosales hurt his hand because he was banging on his ceiling because it was a mop because his neighbors were being loud.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I was wondering, all I saw was that he had hurt it with a mop handle. I was like, how the hell do you do that?
Yeah, I read down this time. This is before, that's all I saw too. This time I read down to the comments and saw how it actually happened. So I was like, how was a mop handle that sharp? Which was not my question.
It's still my question, but
I don't know. It has something to do with the mop part having fallen off and then yeah, I don't know. I still don't really know. I'll take his word for it, though. Who makes something like that up? Have you read any other horror books lately?
I started reading Providence.
Oh, right. The Alan Moore, Jason Burroughs thing.
Yeah. I'm only 3 issues in so far.
How many are there?
12.
Oh, wow.
It's rather long, yeah. And all the issues are double-sized, and there's a lot of text pieces in them. And so they're fairly dense. And it's definitely a slow burn.
Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be like a Lovecraft story, right?
Yes and no. At first I was kind of like, oh, I think this is more like a satanic cult kind of deal. But I'm definitely, after the third issue, I'm starting to see connections to his other series that he's done for Avatar, especially Necronomicon. I think that there's a connection there.
I should go seek that stuff out.
Yeah, they were on sale. It's like $2 each, so that's why I picked them up. I've been wanting to check it out, but they cost like $5 each.
Oof.
Oof.
Yeah.
There's 12 of them.
That's a lot. $60 for this series.
A book.
Wow.
So I was much happier to pay, you know, $23, $24.
Yeah.
What are you guys talking about? Tell me.
Or Providence.
More?
The comic series that,
Is that good?
Yeah, I'm digging it so far. It's sort of a slow burn. That's what I was saying. And I think it's going to end up being connected to Necronomicon.
Oh, I thought they already were. No? Wait, are these comic? These are comics? Didn't he write a novel? No, that's a different thing. Sorry. He wrote a novel in the last few years, right?
In the last few years?
I don't think any of them are horror novels.
He wrote one that was sort of like an odd history of England type of thing that was told throughout the ages. And I started it and
Jerusalem?
I just. No, Voice of the Fire.
Okay.
I hadn't heard about the other one. I never quite got through Voice of the Fire. I didn't get very far into it before I was like, I'm going to take a break, and then never got back into it.
So Jerusalem's from 2016.
Oh.
And it's a novel.
Okay.
And all it says is,
is it horror?
Wholly set in and around the author's hometown of Northampton, England. That's the synopsis.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Pith.
Oh, here we go. Combining elements of historical and supernatural fiction and drawing on a range of writing styles. He described it as genetic mythology. It is one of the, at the time of publication, is one of the 10 longest novels written in the English language. Oh, shit. 1,266 pages.
That all sounds very Alan Moore.
That's
like nothing about that is surprising in the least to me.
If it helps, Jason, it's divided into three sections: the Burroughs, Mansoul, and Vernal's Inquest. So you can really approach it as three big works that make a giant work.
Right.
Yeah.
I think some folks in 11 o'clock comics or whatever on Facebook were trying to read it, you know. Like, I love Swamp Thing. I'll read this. And we're just like, right. Ah!
Right.
That's a bit how I was with Voice of the Fire. And that's one I might get back into at some point. But that one was sort of like, like if you're, when you read Sound of the Fury and you've got Benji's section,
mm-hmm.
If Benji's section also started this novel, but was all told phonetically by like an extremely retarded person, so that you're trying to parse out exactly what the words are saying, and it goes for like 70, 80 pages, and then finally you just throw the book across the room and go, fuck this! Yeah.
Wow. You really have to have some incredibly profound things to say if you're going to put someone through the paces like that. Just making them do that much work to just parse your book.
Right.
You know, I don't consider myself to be an idiot, but that's just too much.
That's like a lot of, and that's the thing is that there wasn't that profundity going on. It's like this little, you know, this takes place back in almost, I don't want to say prehistoric, I don't remember the exact time period, but it's medieval at the latest, like probably way before then, you know, tribal England. And this kid talks a lot about, you know, going pee outside and, you know, getting a boner over a lady and, you know, that kind of stuff. That's what's going on. And you're like, well, Jesus Christ, what... This style is impenetrable.
Mm.
So that's when I might try it again sometime when I'm more in the mood. But it's been some years since I read that or started getting into it.
Yeah, I can see how that mood may be elusive.
Yeah. I have to really be in the mood to sit down and study.
Well, I read all the other books in the world.
I'll have to read you a passage.
Before I die here. Okay. Yeah.
I would like to hear it.
I'll have to dig it out and read you a passage from it sometime.
No. Okay. I don't read Old English.
It's not even Old English. It's just, it's not that. I would have to read it to you. Hold on. Let me go get it.
Yes.
Now I have to do this.
I won.
Okay.
Hey, Jason, did you ever read Blindness by Jose Saramago? Portuguese writer. I think they made a movie out of it.
Maybe that's why it sounds familiar to me.
I'm trying to think.
Yes, maybe not. Saramago. Have you read it?
Yes.
It was good?
I liked it a lot. Like, it was kind of like, as I was reading this book the second time, I really enjoyed it the first time. The second time, I was kind of like, it's like blindness, but not as interesting. Oh, Julianne Moore and Mark Ruffalo. Okay, I don't remember. I didn't see the movie.
I remember this being a movie. That's what I remember. I have not read it.
Excuse me one second. Athena! Sorry. She returned my desk lamp without the plug-in. There's just a cord and it terminates in some weird type of plug I've never seen before, so I don't have I can't actually plug my fucking lamp in. So I'm sitting in the dark. Where's my plug-in? This lamp, you gave me the lamp back, but didn't like the plug?
Oh, I know where it is.
Where is it? Can I have it?
Yeah.
That's swell. Can you get it now?
Yeah, I also want to ask you
Come over here.
What time have you done?
What time am I done? I don't know, maybe a half an hour. Oh, pumpkin carving. I didn't forget.
Okay.
Okay. I totally forgot.
Who's the pumpkin artist in your family? Who's the one that makes like celebrities and shit?
So I'm nobody. I'm not into that. I'm a blue-collar pumpkin carver.
Triangles and...
Yep. I mean, I'll do a, you know, demonic-looking thing with some, you know, long, curly, whatever, eyes and you know...
Yeah.
Demonic grin, but I don't go into that fucking, you know, shit. I don't shave shit off and, like, you know... manipulate the opacity of the pumpkin skin and all that shit.
I appreciate it when I see it.
I appreciate it. No interest in doing it myself.
No way I would ever do it or try to do it. It also isn't very Halloween most of the time. Oh, it looks exactly like Humphrey Bogart. What does that have to do with Halloween? All right.
Yeah. Okay, Dave.
Uh-huh.
Do it.
All right. So, yeah. Oh, by the way, on the cover of this, it's like from the best-selling author of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Like, that in no way prepares anybody for what they're about to get into here. So, like, yeah. So this first section is called Hob's Hog. So Hob, I think, is our narrator here. It takes place in 4000 BC. So I was a bit off there. But, yeah. So long time ago, right? I'm just going to start reading, and you guys just tell me when your brains are leaking out.
I can't stand it anymore.
Yeah, okay. So, a hind of hill, ways off the sunset down, is sky come like as fire, and walk I up in way of this, all hard of breath, where is grass colding on eyes feet and wetting they. There is not grass on high of hill, there is but dirt all in around, that hill is as like to no hair man, he's head. Stands I and turns eyes face to wind for sniff, and yet is no sniff come for far ways off. Eyes belly hurts in middle of eye, belly air come up in mouth and lick of it to it's like to lick of no thing. Dry up blood lump is come back on knee, and is with itch scratch eye, where is yet more blood come.
Wow.
In both eye is so this goes on for like 60 pages, and you're just like, holy, what the fuck.
It's interesting.
I can't do it
anymore.
Yeah. It's a little bit melodic.
Yeah.
In a which, weird, I kinda, mm-hmm. which I kind of like.
In an ega way.
It's poetic.
Yeah.
Actually, reading it out loud makes it a little better.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can imagine reading it out loud would be, like, listening to it is probably more interesting than reading it.
Yeah.
I could see how it just kind of start, when you're reading it, you could kind of start to just fuzz it out, you know, just like, oh, it's going on and on, but yeah, maybe that. I don't know if he intended that, but you know, oral tradition, all that. Mm. Read it out loud. You should read it. So if you start this up again, read it out loud to yourself.
I think I should. That if she shagfuls feet in dark, his little shapes a move. What do you think then?
I don't know. I didn't understand all of that.
So when was this published?
This edition anyway, because this came out from Top Shelf, so it was when he was working for them. I want to say like 2003 actually.
Okay.
It's got a copyright in 1986. Oh. Oh, but this one was published in, I think, 2009. So,
yeah. And what is that called again? Sorry.
Voice of Fire? Or?
Yeah, Voice of the Fire.
Voice of the Fire.
Okay. Of the Fire.
Wait, who's Jose Villarrubia?
Colorist?
Yeah, he's a colorist. So maybe he did some of the, like, graphic design of or something.
Okay. Just wanted to add it to a list of stuff to check out. Not committing, mind you.
Yeah. You get right on that.
Okay.
I don't wonder why he hasn't written more novels. Maybe this Jerusalem book took him a decade to write.
Yeah. It's long. 1,200 pages.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. Anything else?
So, what?
Anything else good you guys have been reading? Prose-wise?
Middlesex is good.
Eugenides?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that book.
Yeah, I'm pretty consistently fascinated by it. I stopped reading it to read Bird Box, but now I started it again.
So I've only read, I don't know how many books he has. I read Virgin Suicides and Middlesex, and I liked both of them quite a bit.
Well, I definitely enjoy his prose. And what are these books? Is it a Buildings Roman? Is that what these are called?
Oh, yeah.
Or it's basically a story just about a family and specifically him, but
Coming of Age is a building.
Coming of Age, yeah, is more of a building.
Okay. So, yeah. I mean, there is some of that, too. I mean, in the early parts of the book, there's a lot of coming of age of his grandfather and grandmother, who are brother and sister.
Yes, they are.
Whoa. But yeah, it's one of those. It's there's a whole lot of different things that happen during the story, but it really is about the family. But I find it all pretty darn interesting.
It sounds a lot like that that one we read. What's his name?
Oh,
that helping right now. Man. The one about the brother and sister, and it was all the. They were like this family with the bear and all of that. What was that called?
Family with the
Hotel
Bear.
Hotel New Hampshire, or
yeah, Hotel New Hampshire.
Oh,
yeah. Except it's
yeah. Don't say that to Matt. He didn't care for that one. Keep passing the open windows, Matt.
Yeah,
we'll never forget that. At least a little bit.
I like Eugenides way more than I like Irving.
Quite a lot less. I really enjoyed that book as well. Dave and I both liked that book, and I also liked Prayer for Owen Meany, so I consider myself an Irving fan. But it's that one was a lot more cutesy, kind of.
Fucking almost. A.
Yeah, and this is not. It's got definitely a sense of humor for sure, but it isn't quite. It's not quite so cutesy.
I couldn't put it down. Like I got so engrossed in that world that he built, and I love that book, Middlesex.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's constantly interesting. Just like, oh, now I'm, now Desdemona is working in a church that became the Muslim pre-runner of Malcolm X church, and yeah. So the way it interweaves history and things. You know, is in this natural way. It's not like
Forrest Gump.
Like Forrest Gump. Like suddenly someone famous shows up and you know they talk to him or something. But much more natural way. You see little bits of different things. You know, bootlegging in Detroit and crossing frozen lakes to Canada under cover of darkness and. Just a lot of little interesting things of Americana and just humanity. A lot of the early stuff that's set in Greece and Turkey and so on. The whole story of Smyrnos and what happened to it, which is real, and I didn't know about. You know, burnt down when the Ottomans came back in after they'd been at war with the Greeks, and it's all very interesting. So anyway, I'll get back to that.
Yeah. I just read McCarthy's first book.
First book?
Recently, yeah. Which I had no idea he had been around that long. It was published in 65.
Yeah.
I didn't even hear of him.
Was that
like
one, The
90.
Orchard Keeper?
The Orchard Keeper, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I can easily say it's my least favorite work of his. But it's...
Yeah.
He's definitely... It's early. Like, I mean, Jason might, you know, get this more than you would, Dave, but it's like, if you've read, like, early Lovecraft stories, he's clearly aping Poe, like, painfully, you know? Mm-hmm. He's definitely Faulknering pretty hard. but I mean, there's some gorgeous, gorgeous descriptions of nature in this, in the, you know, environs that are, mm-hmm. are beautiful, but the story, and there's great moments where characters are interacting and he's developing that weird way of using dialogue that he does and stuff, but just nothing gels for me. Didn't gel at all.
Yeah.
I loved his second book.
I've read that one too.
Oh, you have? Oh, okay.
I sort of had the same. I had one of those things where I was like, I'm going to go through and read all his books in order. And then I read that one and was kind of like, I'm going to wait a while.
But I loved his second book, Outer Dark.
Oh, okay.
That one's fucked up. I mean, that's dark as shit.
Cool. I might have to check that one out.
But this one, yeah, it felt just like he was just kind of a good starting point for him as a writer. And, you know, let's jump mm-hmm. forward an album or two and check the band out once they've kind of got their own voice.
Yeah.
Reading the stuff that I've read, you know, Blood Meridian and Sutri, seem like a mature style, like someone who has written in a style for a while and really understands it, knows what he wants to do with it. So it doesn't surprise me that there'd be a little fumbling around earlier on. He wouldn't be quite so confident and so masterful in that style. And then reading The Road, I thought was actually what happens when someone masters the style, gets a little tired of it, and inevitably what people do, what artists do, they never build up over time. They always pare down. Always. So he starts to shave parts off. And it's a lot less Baroque. It's a lot less, except for some descriptions of nature, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The Road is a lot more pared down. It's real it's real simple.
Yeah.
Compared to something like Blood Meridian.
Yeah, and No Country, I think, is also in that same camp.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I haven't read that, but just based on the movie and everything, I could definitely see how it would be.
Yeah.
I prefer the middle style. I prefer the fully flowered, you know, McCarthy style of Blood Meridian or something like that.
I mean, I love that, but that's his Moby Dick, right? I mean, it's crazy. Kaleidoscopic.
But I'd be interested in reading more. What's that stuff from that period? Because I know you wrote a lot of other things I haven't read. What's that one, like, something about pretty horses? Is that a...
All the Pretty Horses. Oh, yeah, That's the Plains Trilogy. That's the first book in the Plains Trilogy.
Yeah, what's that trilogy like?
I have actually... That's the only other thing I hadn't read. So Dave can probably talk about that.
Yeah, I read all those. I really liked it. The last book is actually the weakest, but my favorite is the second book, The Crossing. That one's fucking badass.
Okay.
Yeah, love that one. All the Pretty Horses is that one's really good too. And that was one of the first McCarthy books I really, really responded to, actually. Like I was having a little bit of trouble completely getting into Blood Meridian. I've since kind of gone back to it once I started to appreciate him. But it really kind of, that was the book that got me, that made me a fan, I'll say.
So mine was
All the Pretty Horses.
Mine was Child of God, which I highly recommend, Jason. I think that's probably that middle period that you're talking about. It's disturbing. I mean, it's about...
You mean The Orchard Keeper?
Hmm?
You mean The Orchard Keeper. Child of God was the one you just said wasn't very good.
No, Child of God I liked a lot from the middle period.
No, The Orchard Keeper was the first one.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, I liked Child of God a lot. That was the first one I
read. I thought you said it the other way.
No, I meant the first... That was the first that I read that I really, like, flipped out over.
All right.
But, I mean, it's pretty disturbing. Have you read it, Dave?
I read whichever one the first one was. I thought that one was Child of God. Maybe it's The Orchard Keepers, though.
No, well, it's...
I seem to be getting my titles mixed up.
Well, he didn't say anything about the plot. Child of God was his third novel.
When was that published?
73.
Oh, wow.
Lester Ballard.
Yeah, disturbing, man. Disturbing stuff. Really good.
Cool.
Apparently, right. apparently they made a movie.
I must have read The Orchard. Yeah. All right.
I'm not saying it would have to be, but I would expect my McCarthy to be disturbing at least a little bit. So that's certainly no turnoff for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm also kind of curious to read the Border Trilogy and see if maybe I get a maybe a little less disturbing but still really mature McCarthy kind of.
Yeah, I think it is it's certainly less disturbing than something like Blood Meridian. it's probably more along the line of something like No Country for Old Men, where it feels sort of like new Western.
Yeah, he killed the Western in Blood Meridian, and then he started writing new Westerns.
Right.
And built it back up.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as like a morality tale, more than like a biblical apocalypse tale, like Blood Meridian, there's no baby trees. No baby trees.
Darn.
Yeah. Brace yourself.
Right. I mean, there's still some brutal shit in it, some stuff that'll tear your guts out, but.
Yeah.
But not to that level, really.
All right, cool. Well, I'll definitely, read one of those.
All right, so two questions. What do I do with all of that conversation that just happened from the break? And then second question is, how do we jump back in?
Oh, first I thought question, you were done.
You could delete it, or we could do an outro and then put it on the end of it as like a
that's fair
bonus feature. I did want to talk about a couple more things before we're done, though.
Yeah, I didn't feel like we were totally done with the book. And we're back. Always works.
So, Matt, you asked me a question. Did I enjoy the book? And I thought of a perfect way to answer. But first, I have to ask you a question, both of you.
Okay.
One of those.
Did it make sense to you? And please explain how that Mallory does not give a name to her children. She refers to them as boy and girl.
So I took that to be that she didn't want to invest in them in a whole way until she knew they were safe or safer. Does that make sense? Calling them boy and girl is objectifying them.
I'll delay my answer. Okay. Dave, do you have an answer for that?
Did that
feel justified to you? Okay.
No, that never felt justified to me. That was one of my least favorite things in the book, and it bothered me from the beginning of it.
I didn't like it.
Like, why hasn't she named her kids? Why? They gave the dog a name.
Right. Well, I talked to Zach Cruzet about this also, or Zach Cruz. Pronounce his last name. Cruzy. Zach Cruzy. Actually talked to him about this too. It did not feel justified to me, and the main reason is, my inclination to try to make sense of things would have been what Matt said. Like, as a way of distancing herself from them emotionally, of not becoming too connected to them, don't even give them names. But that is inconsistent with everything else in the entire book, because everything is always about my kids, my kids, my kids. I must do everything for my kids.
Yeah, good point.
She's already emotionally invested in her kids before they are ever born. She crawls blind across a blood-slicked attic floor to cover the eyes of the newborn, which becomes the boy or the girl.
But I can also see that compounded with, like, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to protect them, but I'm not going to
name them.
Yeah, I just kind of, I can almost see it in a weird way.
My answer to whether I enjoyed the book can be answered by the fact that, in my opinion, given what I just said, I think the only reason that they don't have names is so at the end of the book, she can be asked, what's their names? And she can say, the boy's name is Tom. Tom looked shyly at the strangers. He liked his new name. And the girl's name is Olympia. End scene.
Why not Don? I mean, I get Tom. That seems like a little obvious. Isn't Don a dark horse, really? I mean, or Gary.
Gary.
Gary's got a melodic ring to it.
It's insulting. It I'm not trying to be dramatic. It's insulting. And if I hadn't already
been... In particular instance, I agree. But that's, I don't believe that that characterizes the entire book. No.
But that was the end of the book. If that had not been the end of the book, I probably would have burned it in a fire and I never would have finished the book.
I thought that was a little corn dog. I'm not going to lie. But it didn't bother me as much as it did you.
It would have bothered me less if there had been more attempt to justify her not giving them names the whole time. Like if she'd actually, there's not a lot of internal struggle in this book.
It's like she just met them.
Or external struggle, right? Like you could have had a lot more of her being torn about things or trying to not get too connected to her kids. And it's kind of, I mentioned earlier the lack of imagination, both from the characters and from the writer. And it's stuff like that. We have so little introspection in this book. It's almost amazing. These people are paper thin. So you have this situation, which is mind blasting. Like the world has ended, right? And life as we know it is over. And it's ended not in a way that we could even foresee. There was no nuclear war or virus or anything like that. It's these things from beyond the stars that contain infinity. And yet no one talks about it. Beyond, keep your blindfold on when you go out. They even use broomsticks to try to find the damn creatures. Like the creatures are, they're infinity. Like you're going to just, what are you going to do? You're going to hit him with a broomstick and it's going to feel like a person. And you, I mean, I don't know. It's just, they don't even speculate. They don't even like, and speculation to me is not Tom going, I built a fucking helmet. You know, it's like, there's so much.
Why do you hate Tom? Leave Tom alone.
I hate him inversely to how much Mallory likes him. Okay. There's so much that could have been done philosophically with this. There's so much that could have been done as commentary on the human condition that was just not done, like not even attempted. And that scene at the end is just epitomizes it to me. It's like the cheapest kind of a thing, you know, that there could have been something actually said with the fact that she calls them boy and girl, but no. It's just so we can reveal that they're Tom and Cheryl. And it's that superficiality.
Don't get that wrong.
Sorry. Anyway.
Well,
I don't know. That sounds like you're criticizing it for what it wasn't.
Yeah, so, I am.
It's weird.
Okay. Only because what I think it was a strong premise that did nothing with it, really.
It just didn't do what you wanted it to do with it, which was be introspective and be all about.
Snap!
I mean, that's fine. I mean, they are thin characters. We've already established that, right? No one's going to argue that. Like, no, Felix had a lot going on. Like, no, but I might argue that at least part of that was intentional. That it wasn't just like, oh, he's a shit writer. Like, I don't know if I'm ready to.
Well, okay, granted that. Okay. Well, it not turning into a deeply philosophical novel, sure, granted, that's not something it had to be, not something that he failed to do, is that would be a different book. But it's kind of it's like the diametric opposite of that. It's people who have no internal thought process. They don't think about anything, and they don't say anything, and they don't express themselves in any way that distinguishes them as individual human beings. And there's a lot of other things in kind of an overall way, like when there's a website that talks about people that are doing things to protect themselves from the creatures. The website is called Silly People.
Mm-hmm.
Who would call a website Silly People? That's like, the website's about silly people, therefore it must be called Silly People. It's incredibly simplistic.
What would you call it, Jason, in your infinite wisdom?
I don't know. I might throw a pun in there, or, you know.
Such as?
You're going to make me come up. I'm sure he thought
it's
about it.
It's the end of the world.
Second.
You're registering a domain name. What do you do, Hotshot? What do you do?
If your point is that if I give it literally 2 seconds of thought, I won't outdo him, you're probably right. But I'm not. I didn't write a novel, so.
He has a band, man. He's busy. He's writing songs.
And I have. I will admit to some bias because his hat is a silly looking little hat.
Mm.
So, you know, to some extent, maybe it isn't. Maybe you're right. It just isn't the kind of book that I wanted, and that's not necessarily a failing of the book. But I also wonder. I think at some point you've kind of fail. Like I can and have enjoyed simple stories of just like people in a struggle, mm-hmm. you know, just like, and to me, the way that you do that is with characters, which this doesn't have, you know, you do, usually they are cliched. Like usually they don't get super fleshed out. They have one or two distinguishing characteristics that make them, you know, one characteristic makes them somehow in dramatic opposition to the other characters, and there's something else that makes you kind of understand them or like them, you know, and you have all these different dynamics, but we don't really have that here.
You're,
unless you count,
you're so like, Felix right now, it's
crazy Gary or something like that. Was this book scary? Was this book
scary? I thought it was.
I would say
tense.
No.
I thought there was some tension there. I thought it was creepy a few times.
There was some tension. What was the scene? I remember reading a scene and thinking,
for me,
this is a good tense scene. I think it may have been the bar.
Yeah.
But like, as opposed to the scene with the wolves, I thought was amateur hour, like incredibly bad. Like the writing was just atrocious in that scene. And it could have been really good. Like I mean, that's a scary situation. On the river with your kids, you can't go anywhere. You're in a boat, and there's, you know, wolves. But it did not get me there at all.
Dave,
I think a lot of these are valid criticisms. This is a first novel, as we've talked about.
Okay,
first novels are. Never the best.
As we know, even the greats did not start out.
Right, right. Now he's got another novel, and if I were to read it, this might blow what I'm about to say completely out of the water. What this theory of mine, but it at least, maybe not even a theory, it thematically, some of the things that you're saying worked for me. That's how I mean they worked. That they worked thematically, because so much of this book was about what you imagine and what you can't see. And so a lot of the thinness of the, and I'm not even suggesting that part of it was necessarily intentional. Like, I'm going to make sure no one can tell Felix apart from Jules, or anything like that. So much as the reason that it didn't, that part of it didn't bother me is because so much of this book is about not getting enough information and having to imagine what's going on. We're put even more in that situation as the reader than Mallory is, because we're getting all this in this secondhand, right? Mm-hmm. So we're only getting the stuff that she's experienced and that she's commenting on that she thought was important. So maybe she, I mean, obviously we learn a lot about Tom because she's, you know, totally creamy for Tom, right?
Do we though?
But
I don't think we do.
Oh, you learn all about it, like his background. No, you don't learn how he voted or anything like
that.
We learn
about how his, I mean, do they ever really have a conversation?
Yeah. When he tells her that his daughter died and all that kind of shit.
Yeah, but that conversation, we don't even hear that conversation. She's just like telling us how he told her.
Well, the whole book's that way.
Yeah.
But we could have been. I mean, she can have a conversation in the book, right? Where he actually talks to her and she talks back. And I mean, I guess that could be a stylistic choice. But
that could have been presented as a conversation. Yeah.
What are you doing to Robin's memory? Huh? Why are you bringing this up now?
Oh, Robin, did you have to look that up or did you remember that?
I just finished reading the book today.
Oh, okay. I'm usually pretty good about remembering names, but I did not remember that one. I'm sorry, Dave. What were you saying?
So, I mean, like I said, I think we've all agreed that none of these characters are particularly fleshed out or memorable, and some of them aren't even two-dimensional, right? Like, Felix is just a name. Cheryl is just a name. But all I can say is the reason that part of it didn't bother me while I was reading it was because, like, so much of it was about your imagination going into overdrive because of what you aren't learning. So you're just like they're having to do when they go outside, they're filling in the blanks. That's sort of what I was doing reading the book. And I could see that also being a criticism.
Felix like? Was he an ex-Green Beret with a stamp collecting fetish? And who was your,
well, just like, you know, fetish? you get very little, you can add all that crap on if you want. Like I didn't, but,
he's Felix.
Right. Yeah. He's not Jules.
Come on.
He's the youngest guy,
right? Have a dog. Come on.
Right.
He was the guy from The Odd Couple.
Keep up.
Was,
yeah.
Funny Randall.
He's a youngish guy. That's like basically what you learn about him. Right.
He saw Oscar kill himself.
But you know, so much of what am I trying to, that it's that same thing that you don't have the information. And so you start kind of, your imagination starts to sort of fill things in. And the reason it does that isn't because, you know, because the author hasn't put characters on the page, I have to invent them myself. It's more because I felt a tension there because, you know, something happens in the house. You don't know who did it. You don't know why they did it yet. But obviously, at some point, Mallory ends up alone, which to me says all the other ones are dead. So what happened there? So you start like envisioning who did what. Every little thing that they say or do gets magnified in my head. I'm sure we all have a mental image in our head of what the creatures look like, even though they're never described in any way at all, right?
Right.
Mine are kind of like a collection of like fractals.
Huh. Mine look like a brundle fly.
Mine are... like a what?
Like brundle fly.
I don't know what that is.
Remember the
Jeff Goldblum,
Cronenberg's remake of The Fly? When he just sheds off the skin and he's just kind of that weird transitional fly thing. They're like that. With those big wet black eyes and some viscera hanging down, like tentacles, like Zoidberg meets Brundlefly.
So you actually did. You did go more for the so grotesque it drives people crazy.
Yes, and I like that. I like that you're going like more outer limits, right? You're thinking like you're saying, it's like some weird mathematical expression in a physical form. That's I get that. That's cool, but that's not how I roll. I'm boring.
All right.
That's what I'm saying. Like we all have a different vision, right? And both of yours are completely different from mine. But we just sort of invented, you know, those creatures in our head. And that's the same thing I was sort of doing with a lot of the people in the house,
right?
And that worked for me thematically.
I'll have to agree with you and disagree with you because
right. I think we're agreeing and disagreeing.
Yeah, no, totally. I totally, when I was looking over, I could tell that my opinion about the book was not the same as you guys, and. Maybe this isn't the best place to look, but I went to Goodreads to see what the reviews are like. And a lot of people just flat out liked the book. But as I went through, if I found a couple of not as positive reviews, I still didn't agree with those reviews because a lot of times it was like, we never find out the answer. We never know what they are. We never know what they look like. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that – not only do I think that's not important, I think that's – the opposite of important. Like, I think that would be a bad idea.
Yeah. I thought that was a strength.
Yeah, it's a strength. I agree with you so far as, like, you know, what happened, what's going on, what these creatures are, what they look like, what their motivations are. We don't need to actually know that. I still would have liked the characters to seem to think about it more, mm-hmm. because I think you would have to, but I don't think the book should have answered that for us. And that's totally fine that it didn't. And filling in those kind of gaps is good. I want to do that. Yeah. But filling in the gaps of, like, why should I care that Felix is in the house, or, you know, to have dramatic tension, like you're talking about, I think you have to, like, a person has to feel like they're there. You know, you have to actually have a personality. You have to have something to, I think giving it too much credit, it'd be like, you know, I don't know. Instead of painting a scene of a battle, you just instead you just scroll soldiers on the left side, other soldiers on the right side, you know, cannonball in the middle of the thing. It just, like, everything has to be filled in. Well, then why are you even writing the book? And it's not that bad, but it's still, I don't think there's enough there. I think there's some fundamental stuff to get a thriller going that are lacking.
You know what we call you? You people, we call you Garys.
Can't wait to find out.
You're Garys.
Really?
Yeah, stinking thinking.
Garys.
Yeah.
Garys.
A bunch of stinking thinking.
What's that from, stinking thinking?
I can't remember.
It's like a school marmish type saying it, right? Stinking thinking. I can't quite remember.
Okay, so I guess what do? We
Oh, was Gary following her on the river? As she seemed to believe.
I didn't. I don't know.
I didn't think so, and that kind of came back into that underlying. Where I that's one of the places where I feel like you're not giving it is enough credit for the psychological depth. Not that it was a particularly deep book, or that any of the characters were super deep, but that there were things like that where you could see her mind starting to fragment, and that she was starting to invent things that, or to fear things that she didn't have evidence for.
There was a rush. Well, I did say that I greatly preferred present day Mallory to other. Yeah. Yeah. If I still would have wanted other characters, but give me present day Mallory as a character with other characters with similar, you know, shit going on. Mm-hmm. And I think it would have been more interesting.
Yeah. Maybe a bit more on how she became President Day Mallory.
I really thought you didn't misspeak at first.
I haven't read the sequels.
You guys didn't imagine her as president? I mean, I know it didn't say it explicitly in the book, but I filled those blanks in.
Sure, there's only 1,000 people left.
Why she's not? A natural right. leader, obviously. Right. She's going to run Tucker pretty soon.
Yeah.
So.
And a little doll of Tom is going to be your VP.
You guys need to leave Tom alone.
Her his mummified corpse. Seeing how she became that way, you're saying?
Yeah, so we got, like, a scene, sort of, where you started to see her become, you know, that way. And then you got some idea of the things that she did to prepare her kids. So a little bit more of how she went from, you know, complete hero worship of Tom to being self-sufficient. Mother of two, badass on the river.
Linda Hamilton,
right? Exactly. Uh-huh. Might have been welcome. You know, there were things like that. I'm not saying the book is without flaws for sure.
But I mean, that all comes from, like, repetition, right? That's like saying, like, I want to see how you got all buff. Like, do you want to watch me do curls for 3 years? Because you can watch that, but it's not interesting at all.
No, I just want a montage, man. Well, you got to at least have a montage.
Yeah, but Journey wasn't available, bro. I see what you're saying, and I get that. That's a, I think, a valid critique of that. But I mean, also, like, did you not, guys, like, when you, in the first, like, 10, 15 pages, right, she's describing in the present, like, the day she's leaving, preparing to leave, she's looking at all the bloodstains and the horror mm-hmm. in the house. Yeah. I mean, you know that it's all going to shit, right? I mean, there's no...
Right.
I mean, it's a pretty big foreshadow that no one's getting out alive except her and these two kids. So that was kind of, I thought, was a weird anti-dramatic element of, like, well, I know Cheryl's going to die. I know, you know, Tom's going to die. I know Don's going to die. Anybody else who comes in is going to die. And it's going to be her and them at this point, which a lot of stories use that structure, but it just kind of seemed like it's like Jason's saying, there's not a whole lot of characterization. So you got to at least have something going for it. And to take away that suspense was kind of a undercut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. Although you don't know if people left, or you don't know if, like, if you know somebody, ostensibly, if you know somebody, you know everybody dies in the house, and then you meet everybody in the house. And in a book that maybe had deeper characterization and got you interested more in the characters right. as individuals, and you cared about what happened to them,
exactly.
then you might be, unless it was really totally explicit that they all literally died, you might be wondering, you know, if anybody survived. And then you also would just be kind of tensing yourself, like, oh, is this where they get killed? You know, which there aren't really those moments either of, like, maybe this is the moment, or
there are,
but are there?
Yeah. Like like almost every scene is like when Felix is going to the well, you're like, oh, is this the moment when Felix dies?
I guess I never know. I never thought that, because I didn't think that the...
Just because you didn't care about Felix.
No. Even by then, I didn't think... I thought the only way he could die is if he just, like, ripped off his blindfold or something. Or fell in the well.
Yeah, he might have fallen in the well. You didn't know if the creature was going to kill him or not?
No,
I didn't know if the creatures were violent.
I felt like I did know that already at that point.
Did you guys have any issue with the fact that... all these people did meet their end that you knew about for 200 pages off camera, essentially, while she's in the attic? That also felt like a weird way to deal with that, like an anticlimactic, like...
Yes, people, and no.
They're arguing, something happened, apparently something got in the house, and then everybody's dead.
Right.
And there's the stains you heard about in page two.
Well, again, that sort of worked for me because of the that whole perspective thing, yeah.
Yeah.
That... You don't see what happens. You never get all the information you need in this book. You never see explicitly what happens. It's always Mallory trying to piece things together, either from whole cloth, out of her imagination, or later when she finally has evidence way after the fact, right?
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that because of the whole central. You can never see, and you have to just listen. And I think more could have been done with that to make that a little more scary and immediate, and not quite so, not only off camera, but like almost completely, you know, out of hearing, and, you know, just, although
it's the whole cast,
the part where she wanders,
Cheryl, Don, Felix, Jules, Tom,
we remember them.
Everybody that guys. Matters. Dies off camera in like one paragraph.
Yeah. I did like when she was walking through the house still blind, because of course she didn't know if there was still something in the house, one of the creatures. And she's passing by their bodies, and their narrator is describing to you, you know, that she's walking by Tom's crumpled body or whatever. And I kind of liked that. I like the idea that I'm sure she'd love to look, but she knows she can't. And her friends are literally lying dead around her, and she doesn't know it. And I'm not sure why she thought one of them was a sack of sugar. I don't know. They just leave sacks of sugar lying around.
I thought that was really weird too.
But maybe that's, you know, kind of goes back to that weird psychology where you start to invent safety for yourself. Like, yeah, that's not a body that's sugar.
Yeah, what's sugar. Less scary than a sack of sugar?
No, yeah, no, that stood out to me too. Like, why would you think it's sugar? Isn't she still like in upstairs? Or
right, she wasn't in the cellar at that point. She was like in the kitchen, just laying it on the ground there.
No, it's like the landing or something. It's like at the top of the stairs. It doesn't make any sense. Really weird.
That's even weirder.
But yeah, maybe it's a safety place. I don't know. That must be a bunch of water balloons.
What struck me as being weirder was actually a little bit before that when she was about to give birth, and it kept describing how people were coming in and out of her vision. Like, one of, you know, Jules would come over to her and say like one thing to her and then leave. And then it would be Tom.
It's
and then
like heaven.
Can you get me water, Tom? Tom leaves. And then it's Felix. He's, you know, and it's like, where are there these people milling around and going up and down from the attic? And what are they doing?
It's like, this is your life, but in reverse. This was my life. Hi, I'm Felix. I didn't have the dog.
And he And then Olympia's dialogue is typically fantastic in this. You know, it's just, she says nothing but periodically just says stuff like, this is too much.
So, how did she off herself?
Again? That was fairly gruesome.
Oh, jumping out the window?
She jumped out of the window and
by her entrails.
No, it was like her umbilical cord.
I don't understand how that works. I was trying to picture that today when I was reading it. I was like, wait a minute. So Gary's like, she hung herself. She's hanging by her cord. Like, wait, so her cord's coming out of her nethers. It's wrapped around her neck.
It's going up somehow.
I didn't think she was hanging by the neck by her cord.
Oh. Okay. So the cord's cut up in the glass or the frame, and she's just hanging.
Yeah, she like that. She killed herself through the action of jumping out the window.
Oh, okay.
Slamming against the house, maybe like
that
got all caught up.
Yeah, yeah, I got you.
It so, makes like, more sense, yeah. But I think you guys are again helping the book out too much. I think old Josh is just like, no, man. That's why I had my character in the book tell you she's hanging by her cord. She's hanging by her cord. It's like he had this visual of this that would be really horrific and probably also extra horrific because of the whole motherhood element of it.
Right.
You know, but it doesn't necessarily have to make any physical sense.
Yeah. I don't know that a cord would support 100 pounds of or more of, you know, tension pulling on it. I think that would be, there'd be a really gross result.
I would hope not, because if they could.
Yeah. Like, it certainly is sort of like, what about like after the afterbirth and stuff? I'm not just going to.
Ew.
They talked about the afterbirth, actually. She was slipping around in it.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought that was her own. Was it not?
Oh, is that her own? I thought it was.
Yeah, maybe a little of both. They were.
Yeah. That would have been some good eating if they could have saved some of that.
Hey. Oh, bulk, if you will, but that's good soup.
Yeah.
So good try, Mr. Mallerman, but keep working at it.
Might have shut Don up for a while.
Don, okay, one other thing.
By the way, that to me was the absolute greatest horror of the book, was the thought of being trapped in a house with Don for just like months at a time. Because he never said anything that didn't make him seem like a total asshole.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta blind those kids, right?
He was the designated asshole.
Right, you gotta blind those kids, man.
That was
his character, asshole.
I didn't get his transformation either at all, really, because like what little we did get of Don was, yeah, he was the designated asshole. He was also the designated skeptic, like the naysayer to everything. You know, anything they wanted to try, oh, that's a dumb idea. You know, let's let these people in. No, we'll run out of food. Blah blah blah. But then for him to be the one that embraced Gary and his ideas and would sit there for hours with Gary, I don't know. It just seemed.
Well, that part, that did make sense to me.
Okay.
Because I think what was going on with Don was that all his skepticism and all of his don't let him in, don't do it, don't let Tom back in, because who knows what happened. That all comes from a place of extreme fear. So here was Gary with this comforting story, like, you know.
Answers.
I've seen him. Yeah, he's like, I've seen him myself. Am I crazy? I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
All you have to do is steel your mind against this, and nothing's going to happen, man. Yep. You're going to be fine.
That's how I read it, too.
Yeah.
No, you guys are right. I think like Matt said, it's like religion. Like, I mean, that's basically is Don is a guy who is kind of a simple guy, and you give him answers that will make some sort of sense out of the situation and make him feel more safe in the situation, and he'll eat it up.
Don is like the Trump voter of the group.
Right. I wasn't gonna say it, but
but I love.
But that's basically what he is.
That's basically what he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, don't let in the Mexicans, and we'll all be fine.
Although he started...
Because they're going to come in and eat our food.
He's a rehabilitated Trump voter in some ways, because he starts out with the fear card. You know, fear of the other. Mm. Keep them out. They'll eat our food. They'll take our jobs. And then Gary turns him around to the... What party is that? I don't know. The Embrace the Crazy party. So Gary was supposed to be so crazy.
Don just wanted to be on Gary's cabinet. That's all.
That he came out the other side. I don't know. Anything else, guys?
Oops. No, I think we covered it.
Yeah.
I think we did, pretty much.
So, I don't know what we did in the past, but what Jason, if you had to give us a letter grade.
We didn't do that. I don't remember giving anything letter grades. I think you're trying to blend your that's cool, that's trash.
I don't do that on there.
Oh, I will, in lieu of giving this any sort of a grade, I think you can probably infer my grade, at least roughly.
I want you to say it.
I think that this, people have talked about a film version of this, which I'm sure if this was a bestseller, it'll be a film. This would be like the cheapest film ever made, because all you gotta do is have us one set.
No, I wasn't kidding. Sandra Bullock is playing Mallory. This is in production. It's might even be done.
Way okay. Too old.
All right. I don't think this will make a
she
good
movie. Play Mallory's mom on the phone.
Unless they drastically, yeah, right. Awesome. Mallory's mom on the phone.
No, it's gonna be a shit movie.
It will be a shit movie.
Can I ask one more thing? I'm sorry. Before I forget, no, finish your thought.
Okay, go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, why he wrote this. This got published in 2014, yes?
Mm. Yeah.
So who names the fucking leader of the resistance, whatever the fuck it is, Rick? In 2014, survival horror, blah, 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 the hero's named Rick. Come on.
Yeah.
That's fucking lazy.
Oh, I didn't even notice
you didn't do
that.
Any goddamn research and go, God, the most popular fucking cultural phenomenon in the 21st century as far as like survival horror or whatever is fucking Rick. I mean, that's bullshit.
I thought it was a woman or something.
Who, Constance?
Was it Rick? Yeah, Constance.
No, Rick's the guy that called her on the phone and said, come down. Oh. Blah.
He's okay. The blind dude.
He's the blind guy.
King of the blind school.
Oh, yeah.
Bunch of horse shit.
I don't know. I didn't even notice that. But yeah, who knows? It could be laziness.
It was a nod.
Obliviousness. Or it could be a nod, which would be the worst. If he's actually like, it's more of your fill in the gaps here. I'm going to call him Rick, and then people can, his entire characterization will be provided for me. I don't have to do anything.
I just thought that was weird. Like, if it was written 10 years earlier than it was, I would be like, coincidence. But it's just like, really?
Right.
Well, I don't know.
No, it was a crossover.
Yeah, there you go.
Constance sounds like a nun to me.
The dude from Walking Dead should totally play him in the movie. That would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
Andrew Lincoln.
And Coral.
Coral.
A son named Coral.
Coral!
Are you guys still watching that show at all?
No.
Or reading the comic?
In a while. I read the comic, yeah.
Oh, you do? Okay. Still going on.
Yeah. He's talked about ending it soon. And I've talked about hitting puberty soon. Shit.
I did give up on that one finally.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I left right when Negan got introduced. The last one I stopped. So
oh, really? Negan's
probably
the best.
A while ago. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't.
Seen him on the show, but
I didn't intend to drop. It just happened. And then I just stopped caring.
It's possible that someday I'll feel like trying to watch it, but
I have watched the show.
I'm
current on the show, unfortunately. And every week we just say, God, why are we watching this shit?
That's what I did for the longest time, and I did it enough and consistently enough. And, like, you know, I would do that, and then every once in a while there'd be an episode that I liked a little more.
Yeah.
And I'd use that as an excuse to keep going. And there were enough in a row that didn't do that, and I was just like, okay, I really am going to stop now.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get that way with The Flash. Like, we're into season two now. And season one, I mean, like, you know, it's a comic book show, so whatever. But, like, season two is just banged up, man.
Okay.
What's going on?
I like season two, but I heard season three is terrible. So I'm still stalling
there. Where's the season two? Oh, Lord. Season two is almost unbearable.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Watch the season three as an experiment, Dave, just to see how can it get that much worse.
We'll do it together.
Okay.
We'll live tweet it.
Okay.
You guys are not gamers, but I will say, though, that this... even though I think this will make a shit movie, I think this could make a quite interesting game. Because I think...
You save a lot of money on the graphics.
Right? Between a novel and a movie and a game, this concept works the best as a game. You're Mallory, and, you know, there'd be some way... There'd be... I don't know how you do it. I'm not a game designer. But you would have some kind of game systems for using senses and being able to piece together what's going on around you, and you'd have to decide whether, you know, you would be able to see or not. And you'd be able to see if you need to, the world would be there graphically rendered if you took your blindfold off.
Mm-hmm.
But you would also, if you didn't, you know, you would go crazy, and there'd be more, you know, in my theoretical game, there would be more dynamics with humans and stuff too, more Walking Dead kind of stuff going on.
Danger. Sounds like a black screen and a lot of hearing bumps.
That's what I'm saying.
This is what I wonder about the movie, though. It's like in a game that could work, but in a movie it can't. You cannot black out the screen at all in a movie.
I paid $15 to watch Sandra Bullock walk around in a blindfold.
Holding her hands, holding the hands out in front of her all the time.
Jesus.
No, see, I think it will be a shit movie, but I think it could be a good movie if done creatively, like with a lot of tight shots and off camera noises and stuff like that. It could be a good movie. I think it will be a shit movie.
But if you're looking at everything like as a third person just view of people stumbling around with blindfolds, off camera noises are not going to spook you. You know, you're just going to watch them react and go, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like a reality show at that point. Like, you know, what's behind the blindfold? You just watch somebody groping around, falling down, and getting scared. It just seems silly.
It'll all have to be like really, really tight, close.
Yeah.
Which would also feed into the claustrophobia of the whole thing, right?
Would it be found footage?
I already directed like this film in my head. You can't take this away from me.
Yeah.
It's like Das Boot and The Thing and, I don't know, yeah. Blair Witch Project or something. There you go.
I'm thinking that it's going to be more than passingly similar to Blair Witch Project and how it's done.
Really?
I would guess. Mm. I mean, if they try to do what you're saying with close shots and stuff like that, that's what
I mean. Are you talking like a found footage?
People shoving their cameras in each other's faces. Yeah.
Well, the movie.
That's not what I meant.
But... The movie should cost $7 regardless.
No, I know, but that's what.
Yeah.
It's literally in a house with blankets on the windows. And yeah, Sandra Bullock. There's your big budget.
Hey, there's just tent.
There's your budget.
There's a tent outside.
Oh yeah, sorry.
That they don't see, but. They feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that we talked about it.
We did.
I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy it as much the second time around. I will admit that. The first time I read it, I couldn't put it down. The second time I read it, I was just kind of like, it's pretty good. I don't know.
You had a fever, though, the first time you read it.
I was pretty sick, yeah, but I was totally into it.
A Bird Box fever.
Yep. Bird Box flu.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I read it with you guys, though. I'm glad I read a horror book, and you know, for all my criticisms of it and rolling my eyes a lot as I did it, it was compulsive reading. It was something that it was pretty easy for me to just kind of keep going, and there were scenes along the way. I think the bar scene was one of them where I thought that he did hit a sweet spot of tension where his terse prose style worked better.
Yeah.
And there was nobody talking. So this terrible dialogue didn't get in the way. And there were effective moments, and it is a strong concept. So if the concept appeals to you, theoretical person is listening, then yeah, it's a 200-page book. You can blast through it, and it might creep you out. Might work for you.
Agreed. I'd recommend it, but that's just me.
Yeah, check it out. It's all over the place. You can find it at the library.
I wonder if there's an audiobook. I thought that might be kind of a cool experience.
I'm sure there is. There's got to be. There's an audiobook for everything anymore.
True.
True that.
Now, what celebrities are read by? That's the question.
That would be kind of terrible if there wasn't a way for blind people to read this story, right?
They would feel no tension.
Yeah, they're like, what's the big deal?
I'll tell you what they're not saying.
But of course, you know, that's somebody did mention along the way, but we didn't really draw specific attention to it. But that's kind of the big twist, I guess, in this story, is that the main people who survive and make the best out of this situation are people in a blind school. So people who ostensibly were already more adapted to this kind of a situation and didn't have to worry about seeing it in the first place. And then they also, if you went to this community, then you were blinded. Like if you could see, you were made to not be able to see.
Right. Your
eyes are poked out.
In the old days, yeah.
In the quote unquote old days, like 4 years before. Yeah.
Old times.
Although I would imagine that would seem like history started over or something, you know. So 4 years would be a long time because it'd be all of history.
That's right. New Common Era.
Right. Yep.
No names in the New Common Era, just gender.
Just gender.
Girl 2, boy 2.
Ironically, because we're getting away from gender now.
Wow.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's all cycles, guys. It's all cycles. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you for suggesting that we do a Halloween show. That was fun. I always love talking to you guys about books. Any books. Funny books, sad books, comics books.
Books are great, aren't they?
Aren't they, though? Mm-hmm. Any of you guys going to do NaNoWriMo?
No, I'm way too lazy these days to do that.
Dave?
No.
When's Griff and Earl coming back? Damn it.
Yeah. I think Dave? I still follow him on Twitter.
I do.
I don't have any ideas.
Oh. Okay.
Or inspiration or motivation or...
Jason, it sounded like you had a story idea that you weren't sure you wanted to tell. Did you land either?
I did. I haven't started writing it or anything, but I did write the idea down because I knew I would completely forget.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think of what it was right now, and sure enough, I can't remember, but I wrote it down.
Well, it sounded dark.
Mm. Yeah, because I said it was, yeah.
That's how I knew.
I gave no other details, but yeah.
That's all I have.
Well, right. So
it's like Fox,
I imagine
it's like Fox
the
News.
Darkest story ever written because I was sitting in a blank.
I work with
well,
what
shit,
you give
my
me.
Work. My work is done.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was the scariest story ever told.
It was. It's like the
never told.
It's like that song.
The night the lights went out in Georgia.
No. The Jack Black, the song. The
oh, the Tenacious D one. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Greatest song in the world.
The greatest song in the world. But this is not it. This is a song about the greatest song in the world.
This is a tribute.
This is a tribute. That was genius.
We couldn't remember how great. That's a classic.
It is.
That really is. That was very clever.
Back when that shtick was funny.
Yeah. Or his shtick.
I think they kept riding that dead horse for a while. All right, guys. Well, I hope you have a spooky and happy Halloween.
Yeah, you too.
Mm-hmm. How are we going to publish this?
Do your normal thing. Give it to me, and I'll put it up on our website.
Okay.
And it still exists, so okay. We can still put it up there.
Good. Okay.
And
good.
We We can try to get 20 people to listen to it, throw it up on social media.
I can do that.
Okay.
Seems awfully high.
No.
Yeah, well, I don't think we've ever had fewer than 50 or so people.
Really?
With any other episode.
Yeah, Eeyore, he's right.
We've been gone for so long that 20 might be enough of a goal.
Well, I think we have to tag Mallerman, right? I mean, otherwise it'd be cowardly. You have to. Right, what's that called? Subtweeting or something?
Yeah.
It just seems like you gotta.
I'll be disingenuous and I'll tag him and be like, "Loved your book. Talked about it."
Don't listen, okay?
My name is Matt, by the way.
Hashtag keep writing. Keep practicing.
Good try. How do I sound condescending and say good try in print?
You can pull it off.
I probably can. Yeah. I sound condescending. Whatever I write.
All right. Well, I'm glad we did this, guys. It was fun.
Yeah, it was.
Now I have to go carve pumpkins with Athena.
Yeah, stop delaying. Stop putting it off. I'm going to watch a Blazer game.
That's spooky.
I hope not. I hope they beat them. They're playing one of the worst teams in the NBA. They better not freak me out. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Night.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Bookhouse Boys. I am Matt Howell.
I'm Jason Farrell.
I am Jason Farrell.
And I'm Dave Arbeason.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Bookhouse Boys. I'm Matt Howell. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Bookhouse Boys. I'm Matt Howell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Bookhouse Boys. I'm Matt Howell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Bookhouse Boys. I am Matt Howell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Bookhouse Boys. I am Matt Howell.
I'm Jason Farrell.
And I'm Dave Aloisi.